The things that Jesus never said. Jesus said a whole lot of things. If you read the Bible, there's a lot. If you've got a red letter Bible, one of these where it highlights every word that Jesus did say, you'll realize that there's a lot of red in the Gospels. Even the beginning of the book of Acts is a little bit of red as well, I think. Jesus said a whole lot of things. But there's also a lot of things that we think he said. We think he said, but actually he never did say them. You won't find them in the Bible. Things that we've grown up with. Things that maybe we've been taught. Maybe even here. Maybe even in Liberty Church. Maybe I've said them. Or assumed. Or from just absorbed them from the ether or something around that we think Jesus said, but he didn't say. And so we're through the series, we're looking at some of these things and saying, okay, what did he not say and what did he say? What does that God actually say? Last week, we had a great start to the series. Stan did an outstanding message on I'm starting a religion. And the whole sense of what religion is, but actually what God called us to and what Jesus came to do. It's a great message. It is online. All our messages are online on our website. And I would really encourage, if you missed the message, or even if you heard it, go and listen to it again. It's online. And the great resources that we have available to us to listen to these messages, which take a lot of preparation. So it's worth listening to. This week, what else did Jesus not say? Well, here's something. Follow me and never doubt. Follow me and never doubt. And this morning, I want to give credit where credit is due. When I was starting to prepare this message, I remember there was a book by John Ortberg. Maybe you read John Ortberg's stuff on faith and doubt. I didn't have time to reread the book. I read it many years ago, but I did go online and watch a sermon. Which was very, very good in the whole area of doubt that John Ortberg preached. And so I'm going to give him some credit this morning. He's great, well worth listening to and watching. But let me start with this thing. Follow me and never doubt. Did Jesus say, follow me? He did, yes. I mean, that's pretty clear. It's pretty clear that Jesus said, follow me. Here we go. Right at the beginning of his ministry, as he's calling these disciples, the fishermen who are at the shores, and he says, come, follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. Come and walk with me. Come and live with me. Come and learn from me. Come and follow me. The invitation to those disciples, come on, live your life with me, as he calls those first disciples. And then probably a more challenging and arresting statement that comes in Luke's gospel. Whoever wants to be my disciple, Jesus said, must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. So to be a disciple of Jesus is to follow him. And that means laying some stuff down in our lives. And that's a more challenging statement, but there's a very, very clear call from Jesus to follow him. And sometimes, actually, some churches and some people won't refer to us as Christians because Christians have negative connotations, and we'll be called Jesus followers. You maybe heard that term, and maybe you used it yourself, where we are Jesus followers, those who follow Jesus. In fact, a disciple is one who follows Jesus. So we are clearly called to follow Jesus. What does it mean to follow? Excuse me. Frog in the throat. What does it mean to follow? We live in a world, and a society particularly, that is, we like logic, we like reasoning, we like facts, we like certainty. And what we see more and more is things stated in the media, which with a certainty, scientific facts, things about evolution or whatever, which are stated as absolute facts, which are no more than opinion. And yet they're stated as fact, as a certainty that people, they cannot be any other way. And the truth is that the stuff with Jesus that doesn't fit with that mindset, it doesn't fit into our rational world. So, Jesus performed miracles. He walked on water. Well, people just don't do that. That's not in our mindset. That's not what we expect. He turned water into wine. Much as we would like that, it doesn't happen. We don't see it. He calmed the storm. The miracles of Jesus. He fed 5,000 people. Now, these do not fit with a rational mindset. And then Jesus healed people. Those who couldn't walk. Those who were lame and unable, paralyzed. Those who were bent over. He healed them. The blind were able to see again. He even took those who were dead and he raised them from the grave. Now we have a wonderful NHS and wonderful medical science who do amazing things. But this kind of thing, without medical intervention, it doesn't fit with our rational mindset. And then Jesus did that little thing of rising from the dead himself. And we're thinking, what? He rose from the dead. And we're supposed to believe that? Have you ever met anybody who's risen from the dead? Once you're dead, we're pretty dead. And yet Jesus rose from the dead. And it's easy to think that if I'm going to believe this, if I'm going to follow Jesus, then I am going to have to turn off my brain. And all these things and all these questions that come in, I'm going to have to put my hands over my ears. La, 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 la. I'm following Jesus. No, I'm not listening. I'm not listening to all these doubts and all these questions. And we just follow, blindly follow. I'm not going to think about it. Because if I think about it, it just doesn't fit with so much. And I think if we're honest, most of us, that can cause us problems. That causes problems with our faith that can surface at times in our life, where there are questions and doubts that we're scared almost to voice. We're scared to admit them to ourselves sometimes because we're thinking, if I admit my doubt over this, if I start to question it, it's going to shake the very root of what I believe, my faith. If I allow it to come in, and I can't face that because this is too important for me. And I'm certainly not going to voice it to anybody else, my questions and my doubts. Because look at all these Christians. Look at them all. They're so certain about what they believe. They stand up. Look at the pastor. He stands up there and he spouts forth with this stuff and he believes it 100%. And I've got some questions and I'm not really that very sure. But I'm not going to admit it because the pastor's going to point at me and say, "What? You've got questions. You've got doubts. Look, there's somebody with doubts. How could you possibly have doubts?" One of the things I love, we're doing Youth Alpha at the moment. Obviously, you saw the video this morning, and I love the fact that our young people are getting the chance to ask the questions, which are really, really important to them. And we need to be praying for our young people as they go through this, that God would form faith in them and allow them to know the truth in the midst of that. It's amazing that we're doing that. You ever had doubts? I mean, about anything. I'm not sure about faith. Do you ever doubt anything? Well, okay, yes. Because you might have noticed recently we had an election. And all these parties come forward and they give us a manifesto. Great promises of what they're going to do. I don't know about your approach to that. Do you go, "That is really good. I'm voting for you because you said that and it's going to happen because you said it." All these great promises. I'm going to vote for that party because I absolutely believe that they will do all the things they promised in their manifesto. Or do you maybe a little bit of doubt based on track records, based on the promises that are being made, and you think, "Well, it sounds good, but I'm not really very sure." Maybe you go to buy something. Maybe you go and buy a car or something. Or the exciting buying a car, and you go, and the person says, "Look at the car," and you think it looks nice, and you say to the owner, "Can I get in the car and take it for a drive?" "You don't need to do that," says the owner. "I've already done that. I've taken it for a drive. It's great, and you'll have no problems with this car." What would your response be to that? "Well, if you say so, that's fine. Here's my money. I'll take the car away." You would be kind of foolish to do that. The best thing to do in that situation would be to walk away. Walk away, because we'd have doubts. Do we trust this person? We don't know who they are. Many years ago, I've used this sermon illustration a number of times in the past, but anybody done Go Ape? Go Ape with the aerial walkways? That's a lot of fun, isn't it? No. No, it's no fun whatsoever. It's horrible in every sense of the word. It is terrible. I did Go Ape with my nephews. Fiona and I took our nephews to Go Ape down in Northumberland a few years ago when they were young. And we thought, they'll go and do Go Ape and we'll have a coffee. You had to go on as an adult with them. They couldn't go on. I'm thinking, they're teenagers! But they were minors still, so we had to go on with them to look after them. And I remember standing at the bottom of this thing, and I'm thinking, God, you better give me some good sermon illustrations from this. You really had. And he did. It was good. So you start, if you've ever done Go Ape, you start on a relatively low thing. So you've got these walkways, and you, basically it's these rope things that you climb up and do, and they get progressively higher, higher and higher into the trees, which is lovely if you enjoy heights. And higher and higher and higher they go. Oh, it was awful. I was supposed to be looking after our nephews, and I am petrified. And I remember getting close to the end where you are. There was this rope thing suspended between two trees, these massive trees, and you're so high up. And my nephew, who'd gone across, he just walked across this, and he's standing at the side, and he was saying to me, Uncle John, look at me. Don't look down, Uncle John. And I'm walking across this thing. Come on, breathe, Uncle John, breathe. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm there. I did it. I got to the other side of that, and then you've got the zip wire, which comes down, which brings you down to Earth. How wonderful is Earth? How wonderful. But in order to get from there to there, you've got to do the zip wire. And I'm looking at all these people doing the zip wire, and I'm thinking, okay, well, it's holding their weight. It's obviously going to hold my weight. But there's this little bit of doubt. What if I'm just the person where it's just, I'm the straw that breaks the camel's back, or it just pings and that's it. The zip wire's going to go. It's a very, very long zip wire right across a valley. And should be really exciting. It is really exciting, but you get there and you harness up and you do all that and you're thinking, I've got to do it. And there's a queue building up behind, so I've really got to do this. And so you let go and you go, but there's this doubt in your mind thinking, okay, it could snap at any time. And as you go there, I'm imagining myself plummeting to the earth and splattered all over the ground. I'm going to die. And then you get a little bit closer to the ground and you go from this, if you've ever done this, maybe it's just me. I'm going to die. Now, if it breaks here, I'm not going to die. I'm just going to be paralyzed for life. And it gets a little bit further. And if it goes from here, I'm just going to break a lot of limbs. And it gets a little bit closer and it's going to hurt really, really badly. And then a little bit closer and it's going to be really, really embarrassing. And then you get to the ground thinking, I am safe. I've done it. But right through there was the doubts about, would this thing take my weight? I had never been so glad to be down, and I am never, ever doing it again. Doubts. We all doubt, and I think it's a part of a safety mechanism actually in us. We don't take everything without question. That would be foolish in life just to take everything without doubting sometimes, wouldn't it? Just to take everything that's read, anybody says or does, all right, that's fine. John Ortberg says doubt is an inescapable part of the human condition. And I think it's part of our reasoning mind to question and to doubt. Do I trust? Do I not? Do I risk it? Do I not? Do I let go and plummet across this valley with this... plummet's not the right word to use, is it? No, that's not good. Gently glide across this valley. We make judgments all the time in our lives. So why, when it comes to our faith in Christ, do we think we should expel all doubt? Why do we think we should turn off our mind and blindly follow? We can't risk thinking. I can't risk questioning because it destroys our faith. And yet Jesus, when asked what the greatest commandment was, he said this: love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. Use your mind. If we were to love God with our minds, it doesn't mean disengaging them. It means that when we have doubts, when we have questions, let's engage with those things. We are called to use our mind to think, to reason, to question. To follow requires faith. But faith doesn't mean knowing beyond all doubt. One of the clearest examples of expressed doubt comes in Mark chapter 9. I want to read some verses. Jesus has just been up the mountain. It's called the Transfiguration, probably, if you're a Bible, where he appears with Elijah and Moses, and everything is glowing white, and James and John and Peter, I think, are there, and they're amazed, and Peter embarrasses himself again. And anyway, they do all that, and then they come down the mountain. And this is right in the back of them coming down the mountain. And when they came to the other disciples, they saw a large crowd around them and the teachers of the law arguing with them. As soon as all the people saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with wonder and ran to greet him. "What are you arguing about with them? What are you arguing with them about?" he asked. A man in the crowd answered, "Teacher, I brought you my son, who's possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not." So there's this man, he's come with his son, hoping for healing, and nothing has happened. The disciples haven't been able to do it. "You unbelieving generation," Jesus replied, "how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me." So they brought him. And when the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into a convulsion. He fell to the ground and rolled around, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the boy's father, "How long has he been like this?" "From childhood," he answered. "It's often thrown him into fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us." "If you can," said Jesus, "everything is possible for one who believes." And immediately the boy's father exclaimed, "I do believe, I do believe, I do believe, I do believe, I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief." When Jesus saw that a crowd was running to the scene, he rebuked the impure spirit. "You deaf and mute spirit," he said, "I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." The spirit shrieked, convulsed him violently, and came out. The boy looked so much like a corpse that many said, "He's dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him to his feet, and he stood up. And an amazing story. And I don't know about you, when I read that, I think it's not just that Jesus rose into his feet, that the spirit had gone, but I believe that complete healing would have come to this boy. That all the times he'd been thrown into the fire or thrown into the boiling water or whatever had happened, and all the scarring and everything about his life would have been brought and healed. I like to think that anyway. "If you can do anything," the man says to Jesus, "if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us." This is a life or death situation for this man and his son. He realizes that this is his only hope. He's probably tried everything. He's come to the disciples could do nothing. He's come to Jesus. He's heard about Jesus. He's seen that Jesus can heal other people. He's desperately hoping. "If you can do anything, Jesus." And Jesus says, "If you can, everything is possible for one who believes." "I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief." And in that statement, I think we've got this tension in this man. John Ortberg talks about this. He said, you know, that this man is standing there desperately hoping that his son will be healed. But at the same time, he's got doubts. And there's this tension of belief and unbelief, faith and doubt, hope and fear, praying and wavering, asking and worrying. And yet Jesus takes the faith the man has and he acts on it. The man comes with faith and doubt. He goes away with a greater faith and a lot less doubt. We are called to live by faith in Christ. Now, faith is not certainty. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. Now, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. The truth is, there's so much that we do not see, even the presence of God with us tangibly, the Spirit with us, we do not see with our eyes. It's a faith journey. It is not certainty. Sometimes we long for certainty, 100% certainty. But here's an interesting thing. Where there is certainty, there's no faith. Where is faith when it's absolutely certain? John Wimber, who started the Vineyard Movement, spelt faith, R-I-S-K. Risk. And risk always involves a level of doubt. Whether you're letting go of a zip wire, trusting a political party, whatever it might be. There's always a level of doubt. And if we are to be a people who live by faith, then we must face the possibility of doubt. But the danger with doubt is that it paralyzes us. It stops us. We live in a world where people want certainty. We want facts, rational, measurable facts. If I don't have certainty, then I cannot follow Christ. Prove to me that God exists, and I will believe. If you just prove to me that God exists, then I will follow him. You maybe heard that people say that. Maybe that's what you say to yourself. Maybe that's where you're at right today. If you simply prove to me that God exists, no problem. I'll follow him. I'll do that. If we're not careful, our doubts stop us from believing and taking a step of faith. So how do we do this then? What does it mean to follow? How do we place our faith in Jesus when we have doubts? John Ortberg says the very interesting statement. He says there are times in life when we must give 100% commitment without 100% certainty. Yeah? There are times in life when we must give 100% commitment without 100% certainty. When I let go of that zip wire, I was 100% committed. There was no going back. I was not certain that I would reach the ground alive, living human being. I'm very glad that I did. There was a very small level of doubt based on all the things, but there was doubt. Faith involves a level of risk. But the good news is that our doubts don't stop us coming to God. We can come to God with a mix of faith and doubt. I do believe, said the man. Help me overcome my unbelief. He came to God with this desire, this desperate hope and faith that God, Jesus, would heal. But in his mind and all his experience and everything that's gone before is saying, is it going to be any different at the end of this day from where we are now? But Jesus took the faith the man had and he acted. And the boy was healed, restored, delivered. But the man needed to come to Jesus. With all his doubts and all his questions, he needed to come to Jesus. If he'd never come that day, his son would never have been healed. If he'd thought, what's the use? Or after he'd seen the disciples fail to heal his son, he thought, oh, forget it, I'm just going to go home. Jesus never turned him away for his doubts. There was a theologian who lived last century. I'm never quite sure how to pronounce his name. Henry Nouwen. You may have heard of Henry Nouwen. Maybe you've read his books. Henri Nouwen. I've heard all sorts of pronunciations of his name. Theologian, Catholic priest who wrote a lot of reflective theology and very interesting reading. Anyway, later in his life, he became fascinated with a trapeze act called the Flying Rodleys, apparently. Great name. He saw them at a circus. He was invited to a circus. He saw this trapeze act. He was fascinated with them. He got invited back afterwards, and he asked them some questions. They invited him. They took him for dinner. He ended up going on tour with them just to see. He got fascinated with this trapeze act where trapeze. We don't see so much trapeze things going on, a trapeze where somebody flies across on this thing. Gosh, yeah. And then they let go, and they do all sorts of somersaulty things, and then somebody catches them. And then they do all that kind of thing. Anyway, he said that he was talking to one of the trapeze acts, one of the flyers, one of the passengers. There's a flyer and there's a catcher. There's somebody who lets go and there's somebody who catches them. And the flyer was saying, Everybody looks to the flyer because they're the one who does the somersaults, and that looks terribly impressive, and they let go of the rope and they let go of the bar and everything. But he said the main star is the catcher. The catcher is the one who seals the act. So the flyer lets go. And once they let go, it's up to the catcher. The catcher has that split-second timing to be right there for them. If the flyer, he said, tries to catch the catcher, if the flyer reaches out and tries to grab the catcher, he'll break his arms. He'll break the wrists of the catcher, and they will both fail. They have to just simply let go. They cannot grab onto the catcher. The catcher grabs them, and they're safe. And he was fascinated by that. The flyer lets go and places his faith in the catcher. Sometimes we have to give 100% commitment when we're not 100% certain. Following Jesus requires faith. Sometimes we simply need to trust in the catcher. And so we live in this tension of faith and doubt. We'd rather not have doubts. We'd rather be 100% certain. And yet, following Jesus is done by faith. Paul writes in his letter to the Corinthians, "Now we see but a poor reflection as in a mirror." Bearing in mind that a mirror in Paul's day was nothing like our mirrors, which looked pretty good, generally. Well, maybe you look in the mirror and think, that doesn't look pretty good at all. But mirrors in Paul's day would be polished metal, where, and the reflection wouldn't have been great. So we're talking about quite a different thing. "Now we see but a poor reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known." There will come a time when we will see clearly. When the disciples followed Jesus, they did so without 100% certainty. When Jesus said, "Come and follow," they didn't know for certain what was going to happen. And perhaps if they'd known for certain some of the things that would happen at that time, they would have said, no. Even after Jesus rose from the dead, they still had their doubts. As we follow, though, faith starts to grow. John Ortberg says the disciples started by having faith in Jesus, and they began to have the faith of Jesus. As we place our faith in Jesus, as we decide to trust him, to walk with him, to give our lives to him, we start to grow in faith. "I do believe," said the man, "help me overcome my unbelief." When he came to Jesus, there was a balance of faith and doubt. When he walked away from Jesus, that balance had shifted significantly. As we experience his grace and his mercy and power, doubts can start to fade and faith rises, and we start to take on the faith of Jesus. But that only comes if we're prepared to place our faith in Jesus. And my prayer for us all through this year, for the Liberty Church family, is that we would grow in confidence as we put our faith in Jesus, that together as we experience the power and the presence of God, our faith would grow to become the faith of Jesus. I think there'll be times when we all have doubts. Even the most faith-filled, mature Christians, the ones you look up to, the ones you watch on the God Channel or whatever you watch them, the people who stand up and preach, still face doubts all the time, and that's okay. I became a Christian when I was 17. And just under a year later, I went away to university to study physics. And I was quite concerned, as you would be, because the whole thing about science and faith are not great bedfellows, as it were. Where people were looking for certainty. The word science comes from the word to know. And I thought, this is going to really shake my faith. And what I found was, to my surprise and delight, was that true science was very humble. A lot of the science that we get taught and we see in the media is quite arrogant, I think. But true science was very humble. And what we found was that people would say, for everything that we find out, it just opens up 100 more questions. It never gets smaller. We never get to the point where we say we've got it sorted. And every good scientist would say, when I find an answer to something, that's never the end of the road. It just simply opens up a whole universe of other possibilities and things. Scientific theories get changed all the time as people experience more. And I think that's the same with us. We just, as we come to God and as our questions are answered and doubts are put aside, it just raises more questions. There's always more of God. And God invites us to come with our doubts and with our questions, to acknowledge them, to use our minds to grow and change, to ask the questions why our young people are doing in Youth Alpha. And I believe as we question, it opens the door to yet greater faith for us. Come as you are. Bring your doubts, bring your questions, but come. Jesus invites us all to a life of faith. And perhaps today, for someone here, whether you've been a Christian for a long time, or maybe you've just been considering faith, perhaps today is the day to let go and trust the catcher. Perhaps today is the day to let go and trust the catcher. He's got you. He will not let you fall.